In brightest day, in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power. Green Lantern's light!
Welcome to episode 4 of Green Lantern's Light. I am Michael Bradley.
I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
Dang it.
I am
I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
I'm really letting you go this time.
I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
I'm J. David Weider.
This is a show where each episode we take a look at roughly 3 months' worth of Green Lantern comics, beginning with Green Lantern 172 from 1983, and work our way forward. This episode, we're continuing our coverage with a look at the Green Lantern books from April, May, and June 1984, which includes Green Lantern number 178, 179, and 180. Thankfully, a better set of issues than we had last episode.
Almost certainly.
Yeah, the last ones were pretty awful, actually. So we're going to begin our coverage with issue of Green Lantern number 178. The title to this was A Bad Case of the DTs. Now, I can't remember. Does DT stand for something other than Demolition Team? I can't remember.
It's Might Detox, be... yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, fair enough. And this one came out on April 19th, 1984, with a cover date of July for 1984. The credits for this one, hold on, I've got to take a closer look. Bless you, Waldorf. My dog sneezed. Len Wein is the writer and editor. Dave Gibbons is the artist and letterer. And Anthony Tollin is the colorist. So, wow, three-person team on this one. So as we get into the story, okay, the DTs, or Demolition Team, visit Block. Block is the big bad guy that's sort of behind everything that's going bad with Green Lantern at the moment. And so the DTs show up, they break through a wall, and they introduce themselves. They have some actually very amusing names. One of them is Steamroller. Yeah, I get that one. One's Jackhammer, and of course he has a jackhammer. Steamroller is actually riding around on like a steamroller motorcycle, by the way. There's Hard Hat, who is a heavyweight contender, and he's basically the Juggernaut from X-Men. And this one's my personal favorite, Scoop Shovel. That is the best name. If I ever become a supervillain, I'm going to name myself Scoop Shovel.
Well, you can't do it now. You've told everybody.
Well,
it won't be a secret anymore.
Well, I'll just walk around saying, my name is Jeffrey Taylor, a.k.a. Scoop Shovel.
Okay, that works.
Yeah, there we go. And, of course, they're all led by Rosie, who is, of course, a riveter. If you don't get that reference, just take a moment and look it up. So, Block doesn't trust them. Yeah, go ahead.
I didn't get that reference initially through the initial read. I got it during, but...
Yeah, she shoots these, like, red rivet things, which, coming out of the gun, they kind of look like she's shooting little nipples. It's very amusing. But Block doesn't trust them. But they basically say, but we're the Demolition Team. We're awesome. And he says, oh, okay, go ahead and go take down Ferris Aircraft. That's what I want you to do. And in Coast City, Green Lantern shows up to save the day. These thugs have stolen an armored truck, presumably full of money. And Green Lantern completely stops them in kind of a funny way. He makes a ramp that they drive up, kind of defying the laws of physics on that one. But, you know... And then makes the comment that, you know, he's doing exactly what pelicans do when they've got a clam that they can't open. Bring them up to really, really high up, then drop them down on the rocks, which will break the shell, and then they can get to the clam. And that's what he's doing to these guys. But they beg to be saved, so he uses a catcher's mitt again to catch them. and saves the day. He goes back to Ferris Aircraft, where he's shown the new, we've already seen it, it's a solar-powered jet. Comic book physics once again, solar-powered jet. Oh, well. Hal is actually going to be the test pilot on this thing, but this other guy, Richard, is filling in, and he's the one who really wants the job. And he's even thinking to himself, you know, the jet should have been mine to fly. Wah, wah, wah. So the phone rings, and Bruce Gordon, the guy who, well, he's Eclipso for one thing, and he also, I think he designed the jet. He answers the phone, and he talks to some creepy dude in a phone booth with a Flasher-style trench coat on. We can't really see his face. And he's like, the plane is going to be mine. Ha, 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 ha. And he hangs up. I'm not kidding. That's exactly what happens. So then there's this jogging scene between a couple of the scientists at Ferris Aircraft and the guy. It seems like he's going to have a heart attack, but he's more or less okay right now. We're going to find out a little bit more about that as we get farther into the issue. Back in Washington, D.C., Block finds out that the shark from a couple of issues ago failed to kill Green Lantern, so he's worried that the demolition team's going to show up at Ferris Aircraft and Green Lantern's just going to stop them in their tracks. I guess he didn't pay attention to the fact that all the DT's equipment are, you know, yellow, so what's Green Lantern going to do about it? But he's worried that they would fail because of it, and that then somebody might be able to trace the demolition team back to him, and he can't have that. So he calls the Monitor, who's the one who, you know, set him up with the demolition team to begin with. And the Monitor is just like, don't call me, don't talk to me. It's not my job to help you out when you've got these problems. All I did was put you in touch with them. Now it's your problem. Go away. Which is exactly how I deal with most of my problems when something like this happens, but that's beside the point. So the demolition team attacks, and Hal ends up leaving Carol's side and changing into Green Lantern. But the second that he changes, the Guardians show up and say, look, we really need you to go to this other planet right now. No stopping, do not pass go, do not collect $300. $300, $200, what am I saying? I played that game before. I must be playing under different rules. But he says, no, I can't go. I have to save Ferris Aircraft. And he's like, didn't we just exile you into space for a year because of something exactly like this? You need to go and do what we tell you to do. So he's like, oh, well, I guess I got to do that. So he flies off watching the demolition team basically destroying Ferris Aircraft. And I don't know if they're actually killing people. Probably not for lack of trying. But So he flies off. Hal gets to the planet, and this planet is awesome. It's paradise, basically. And I think even the name for it is translated to paradise. The problem is that the core of the planet is about to explode. It's going to be some sort of a thermonuclear detonation, just like when Tomar Ree was supposed to go and try and save Krypton and failed. And meanwhile, back on Earth, Carol comes out and faces off against the demolition team with her whole team behind her. And the demolition team is basically about to kill all of them. And some dude shows up whose name is the Predator, without dreadlocks, by the way. And he says, now I'm going to kick your butts. And that's where the issue ends.
Cool.
Yes.
What you got on this one, David?
I have quite a bit. I mean, the cover, starting with that, I like that Green Lantern is a presence, even though he's not technically in the cover. He's kind of has that spiritual presence. Starting with page 2 and 3, the demolition team, they immediately make me think of old Tonka toy advertisements.
Yes.
That was the first thing I thought of. I mean, it just looks like something straight out of a Bronze Age comic book ad. And then on page 4, JLA, I had to look that up, and I don't know if Len Wein had a Mad Libs with the backstory on these people and just decided, oh, he's a JLA player. Great. And I had to look it up. It's kind of like racquetball with these little scoops. But I just
which
love
is
that.
Why, which is why he's the scoop shovel.
Exactly. It makes sense. I thought that was a nice reference, but it was a little obscure. I don't know if that was a big thing in the 80s. I don't remember it being so. And jumping to page 5, say what you want about the complexity of Kyle and John's constructs, the creativity. It would all be true, but you have to give Hal credit here. He's sewing the bullets together. That's pretty genius. He's zipping the line in and out of them and then uses that. Looks like he uses that to capture the thieves.
Yeah.
That's pretty creative for Hal.
That's really creative, and it's really cool.
And then he uses a baseball glove, which is more up his alley. And he makes a Hot Wheels track, which is great. That's right up his alley, and except for the broken necks that the drivers would obviously, get by being dropped into a baseball glove from that height. And then on page 8, I'm sorry, I have to do it. Just that scene of the stranger walking off into the sunset. I keep hearing "Don't You Forget About Me" and kind of like overview of a nerd, a jock. Is that Judd Nelson by chance? I just couldn't get that out of my head. Won't you come see about me? I'll be alone, dancing, you know it, baby. Tell me your troubles and doubts. Giving me everything inside and out. On page 9, I think Ramirez is totally checking April out. I think just looking at that smile on his face and that creepy mustache, oh yeah, he's got it in for Miss April.
It looks like he's checking out the guy.
Well, let's not rule that out. He does look like the brawny man, and the brawny man looks like the guy that Liberace got AIDS from. We're going to have to cut that out, but...
What?
Yeah, Liberace's gay lover looked just like the brawny man.
Okay.
From the 80s. Anyway, moving on. I think on page 15, I really like seeing Hal's reflection in the lantern in that third panel. Normally, yes, it's drawn like metal, but you don't necessarily see that kind of detail. And of course, Gibbons is Gibbons, so it does fit with what he's done. But I like the idea that I can see a reflective metal surface there.
Right.
Rather than, something on a page. And then, of course, Guardian on page 16 totally calls Hal on what was, as we're going to find out, maybe an empty promise that he made about being true to his Green Lantern duties. He's a Green Lantern through and through. And yet the first time something comes up, and I know it's danger and his friends are in trouble, but he's like, I got to stay here. Oh, wait, that's right. I did say that, didn't I? And then on page 20, we've got the I have a bad feeling about this line, which I can't believe nobody got sued by Lucasfilm. Because apparently Lucasfilm owns the copyright on that.
On what? I'm sorry.
I was saying I have a bad feeling about this.
They own the copyright on that?
That was a joke.
Yeah, it's not for real. But because it's in all six of the movies. But actually, yep. What Hal is saying is I'm getting a bad feeling about this.
Oh, they found a way around it.
And it has an exclamation point at the end.
Okay. Well, that's probably how
it's a very different statement.
That's probably why Lucas didn't come down on him. And then on page 23, when the Predator shows up, who invited the 90s era Marvel characters to the DC universe? He looks like Darkhawk.
He really does. You're right.
I mean, it wasn't even like a little bit. That was the first thing I thought of when I started pulling these books out. I was like, oh, what's Darkhawk doing here?
And that when this guy was designing his costume and, he's got his friend who's helping him out, who's some sort of an expert on something, he's like, give it wings. Well, I can't, but it won't help you to actually fly. I don't care. I really dig on wings, man.
But that's all I have. That's all the page by page.
As for my notes, this cover's okay. Hal being in the background is actually my least favorite part because the way it's sort of screened back, it almost looks like a printing error, and I think it would have been a better cover had they just left that off entirely.
Oh, I can see that.
But it's also kind of weird that Carl Ferris is on the cover since he's not in any of the three issues we're going to talk about. this episode. Spoiler alert. But to get into the page by page, Rosie here on page 2 and 3 is talking about how the Monitor hired them, and it's kind of weird seeing the Monitor have such personal contact with people, because having read Crisis on Infinite Earths, you really don't get the impression that he'd be having that direct contact with these people.
Yeah, it would be more something where Monitor would outsource it to somebody else who then gets them.
Right. And I think at this point...
Or, you know, just make Harbinger do it.
That's what I was going to say.
And I think at this point the writers were still largely being kept in the dark about who the Monitor was, if they were even concretely sure about it. They were just given kind of a vague idea and told to work him into the various issues. But page 4, this is a pretty ridiculous exchange here, but Block says he's not convinced that they can do the job, and then the demolition team goes through and introduces themselves, saying their names and what they do, and which amounts to 3 athletes, an oil rig worker, and a woman who knows what to do with a rivet, whatever that means. But then Block says, okay, I'm sold. This is the equivalent of me needing help with my plumbing in my house and someone telling me, hey, I write comic books. It's like, okay, that's great, but the two don't have anything to do with one another. So
it's like, hey, I own a wrench.
Right. And the reference here, Jack Hammer references his brother had faced off against Superman, and they make a footnote that it's Action Comics 538. It's actually a Mike W. Barr story from 537 and 538. Basically what happened is Superman's powers were weakened, and he got the snot beat out of him by Jack Hammer, this guy's brother, and then in the next issue, Superman had his crisis of confidence before regaining it and defeating Jackhammer. It's kind of a random reference, but I like it because it gives the feeling of a bigger, more connected universe without being so tightly interwoven that you have to read everything or risk being lost.
I'd like to see Superman go up against Scoop Shovel.
Yeah, pretty much. Page 7 through 10, these subplots with the supporting cast all feel very soap opera-ish, but that's not a complaint because I know they're building the things. Plus, I like it when the supporting cast has more to do than just to give the hero someone to talk to.
Yeah, really. You don't see that kind of density in comic books today.
No.
I've been enjoying the subplots almost as much as some of the main plots.
Yeah. And on page 10, I don't want to spoil too much ahead about what we're going to talk about later in the episode, but given what happens in the third issue we're going to talk about, it makes me think this scene with Clay and April being out together and being extremely physical, both with their exercise and with each other, was very intentional.
Yeah, I didn't connect the two till now, but I can see where you're going with that. Yeah.
And page 11... I understand the importance of having a backup plan, but if Block wants to neutralize Hal, it seems to me using the secret identity would be his most efficient weapon.
More or less, yeah.
Okay. You got an ace up your sleeve and you're not playing it, okay.
Right, yeah. It's like using the pea shooter when you've got a bazooka in your arsenal. But page 16, I love this. Hal, any Green Lantern, is a cop, and sometimes cops have to make hard choices between aiding those closest to him and doing what's right to aid the greater number of people. And Hal's trouble with making that decision is what they're dealing with here and will really continue to do in the upcoming issues. I said it in our first episode that Hal's the kind of guy that knows right from wrong, but sometimes even with that knowledge, you're faced with a situation where there simply isn't a good solution to the problem.
No, just a big gray area.
Well, not necessarily a gray area, but either choice he makes, you're leaving someone out in the cold, basically.
True. I don't know. I'm married. I would make my wife happy before my boss. So
yeah. Well, the wife is the boss, if we're being honest. Mine. I don't know about yours.
Yeah, but yeah.
Page 18. That must be some kind of tricked-out steamroller, since normally they don't go anywhere near fast enough that you could actually launch an attack on one. But page...
Until now.
Until now. Good point. page 20, Hal makes a reference to Tomari trying to save Krypton. I thought this was a nice reference, making the problem similar to Krypton's problem, because the readers immediately know how dire the situation here is without a lot of cumbersome explanation.
And I think without the reference, you know, comic book readers would have noticed the similarities, and it could have come off really cheesy.
Right. Yeah, it could have.
I'm not sure that I would have necessarily picked up on that, or at least made the direct comparison. But since he is doing something that is exactly like what Tomari was trying to do with Krypton but failed, that actually I think is what makes it a lot more dire, because another Green Lantern has tried exactly this and failed at it.
Right.
Oh, true, yeah.
As I recall that story, didn't Tomari just run out of time?
Yeah.
Basically, okay. Yeah.
Okay. It's been a while. Pages 21 and 22, this actually goes back to 17 and 18 too, but I liked seeing Tom and Carol and the rest of the folks at Pharos Air trying to defend against the demolition team. Again, a strong supporting cast is a very good thing in my book. And then we get to page 23. I'm not sure if Carol's "Oh my God" here is in reference to the Predator showing up or because he actually left the house in that outfit. But that's all I had.
Well, I guess it's my turn. I'm not huge on this cover, but a big part of that is because the DTs don't make me feel intimidated by any stretch of the imagination. And
not even Scoop Shovel?
Not so much intimidated. Okay. Then you get to pages 2 and 3, which it kind of feels like a waste of a double splash to me. But again, it could be because the DTs don't make me feel intimidated by any stretch of the imagination. And how the heck does the monitor know these guys? That was my big question. Like, you know, well, I guess he is the monitor, so he monitors stuff, and maybe he's heard of them that way. My best guess is that he reads a lot of comics, but I couldn't tell you for sure. Page 4, yeah, my favorite DT, Scoop Shovel, and not just because it's a cool name. No, it's because it's that name. Pages 5 and 6, very standard Green Lantern intro where he shows up and has that big save the day scene, and I really like that little bit about pelicans and clams, but I also like clams, so there you go. Page 8, Davis is a sore loser, and I'm positive that this plot line is going to continue, although I'm not sure exactly when. Page 9 through 10, this scene where they're jogging, and then they eventually get back to where that chair is. This doesn't actually accomplish anything. The whole scene for me just does not feel like it's actually gone anywhere or done anything that hasn't already been done. We already know about the chair, and this would really be just for somebody who didn't pick up the last issue. But it's still not going to matter until another issue.
Right.
So just didn't do anything for me. It felt like the whole thing could have just been cut out and it would have been just fine.
Is this their only scene in this issue?
Yep.
Then they're probably just checking in.
Okay.
Say, hey, these characters still exist.
Well, still, if you're going to check in, you should do something to advance the plot line,
yeah,
and that's not what's happening here. Page 13. This is the one where Block is talking to the monitor, and of course there's some guy with sunglasses on outside who's listening into the situation, looks like a spy. Do we know who this is yet? I don't remember if we do.
Yeah, he was introduced last episode.
I know, Mr. Smith, but do we know anything about him?
Other than he's been spying on Block? No.
Yeah, okay, so still waiting to get into that as well. Page 15. Panel 2. Hold on, I'm on page 14. Page 15, the second panel where Hal's actually changing into the Green Lantern costume from Hal, and the coat sort of fades away. I actually kind of dig this for a costume change, because his regular pants are still sort of there, but translucent. You can see him kind of outlined, and the coat's still there as well. In fact, it's almost like a Guy Gardner coat at this point. So, kind of a funky moment. Pages 15 and 16 with the Guardians. You know, I was really just waiting for this kind of thing to happen. with since they just had that big story where he was exiled for a year and came back and he promised to be a good Green Lantern. I'm like, oh man, at some point the Guardians are going to ask him at the worst possible time to go off and do something, and he's going to have to do it. And the thing is, he does have to do it. He said that he would. Because, I mean, this is his job. And still, here's the thing that kind of bugs me, that there are a couple of ways that he could have dealt with the situation. I think that I've seen him use a construct of himself before, and I don't see why he couldn't leave a construct there that would, you know, maybe help or something like that. Worst case scenario, he's a member of the JLA, and he's got a ring which he can use to contact them if need be. The Flash could be there in seconds. Superman could be there in seconds.
And by that same token, though,
the DTs would not be able to stand a chance against either of them.
No, and by that same token, there are how many Green Lanterns that could have also gone to Omnicron?
Well, Omnicron's in his sector, though.
It's in his sector, true. But is that really a one Green Lantern type of problem?
Well, if I were the Guardians, I would send at least a couple because it's kind of a big job.
Exactly.
But still.
And from the Guardians' warped point of view, that's not the point, you know.
True.
It's Hal's responsibility to go, and he said he would, so he needs to go.
However, it's the principle.
However valid that is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And page 20, I had a similar note. Nice throwback to the Tomar Ree Krypton thing. But I get a huge kick out of the fact that to figure out what's wrong with the planet, he uses a Green Lantern construct stethoscope and puts it on the ground so that he's able to figure out, just what I was afraid of. The radioactive core of this world is violently unstable, threatening to explode at any moment. And he knows all this because he's a planet doctor. Page 22.
Captain Planet.
Yes, exactly. Or maybe it's page 23, the final page with the Predator. Any other time, I might look at the Predator and say, oh, jeez. But, you know, after the DTs, I'm open to the possibility that this guy could be pretty cool, at least by comparison. And I do like the hand claws and the foot claws. Those are kind of cool. But I still leave this issue thinking that I'm more interested in Hal's story off Earth than I am in the one that's actually going on at Ferris Aircraft right now.
Yeah.
Yep. And that's it for me.
Did you guys look at the letter section?
I didn't.
I did.
Did you notice one of the letters is from Beau Smith?
I did not.
I mean,
I read it, but I didn't recognize the name.
Yeah, he wrote, he did some DC work. He did some Green Lantern work. A lot of Guy Gardner Warrior.
You talking about this issue?
Yeah.
Oh, there we go. That's why. Okay.
Steven Scott Beau Smith.
Oh, okay, that's why I didn't notice it. Okay.
Yeah, and I had to look up to make sure it's the same guy, and it is. And he's talking about, I mean, obviously, I think they went to a new paper stock at this point, which by our standards, looking back, was a little bit better than newsprint. But he's talking about how really Dave Gibbons makes this paper pop. And he also thinks that Clay Kindle may be on his way to becoming DC's newest superhero. Spoiler, no.
and Blue Devil.
Yes. I actually have the first appearance of Blue Devil in Firestorm.
I think I might have an issue or two of this series, but not a whole lot of it. It was one of those 50-cent bin things.
Yep.
They also get called out here in the letters column for the invisible yellow force field bit. Ween replies that they questioned it too, but when putting the issue together, that's how they described it in earlier stories, so they just went with it.
Invisible yellow.
Yeah. So in other words, it's that guy's fault. Don't blame us.
Okay.
They did it first.
I learned it by watching you.
Yeah, right. In the in Dick Giordano's... Are we done with the letters page? Sorry.
Yeah, that's. I just wanted to point that out. I'm sorry.
In Dick Giordano's Meanwhile column, there's a short profile on Bob Greenberger, and it says he's working on the maxi series called Crisis in the DC Universe.
Oh.
Interesting.
I can't believe how close we actually are to Crisis.
About 3 months.
Yeah,
it's coming up fast.
I didn't realize it until the third issue of this of the what we're looking at.
And clearly very little of that is actually plotted out just yet. And I have to wonder which came first, you know, the idea of having this monitor, which would then be part of the Green Lantern story, because it was going to be used in the Crisis on Infinite Earths or whatever it is they were going to call it at that point, or if they were just looking around what was going on in the DC Universe right then and just saying, hey, they haven't shown that monitor guy yet. He sounds bad. Let's use him.
Yeah, because the monitor we see here doesn't necessarily seem like the monitor we end up getting to know in Crisis.
Yeah, same thing with Harbinger. She's like the floozy here.
Yeah.
I think the monitor was created and the writers were told to use him in their various upcoming stories.
Probably.
And then they were still evolving the character or molding him for how he would appear in the actual Crisis series. He'd appeared in two issues, I believe, before his first appearance in Green Lantern. There was a New Teen Titans annual and I believe an issue of New Teen Titans.
Gotcha. You're wrong on that.
Well, that would make sense. George Perez.
Right. And Marv Wolfman. Was Wolfman still on the... Okay, yeah. But if nobody has anything else, we're going to take a quick break for a couple promos, and then we'll be back for Green Lantern number 179.
On May 30th, 2011, DC Comics announced the historic renumbering of all their superhero titles, and the internet broke in half.
No. No. It's not true. That's impossible.
Critics and naysayers abounded. Confusion reigned across fandom.
What'll I do? What'll I do? What an unusual view.
Not to mention the first reactions to the Supergirl costume.
I hated her so much. Flames on the side of my face, heaving breaths.
But then the books actually hit, and opinions.
He likes it. He likes it.
Opinions began to change. The New 52 Adventures of Superman is a monthly podcast where John Wilson,
J. David Weider,
and
Michael Kaiser
take a look at each of the adventures of Superman and his family of characters in Action Comics.
You know the deal, Metropolis. Treat people right or expect a visit from me.
The Superman who appeared 6 months ago could hurdle skyscrapers and toss trucks around. Now it's faster, now it's stronger. How soon before it can't be stopped?
Superboy.
If resolving a situation for him is going to get me out from under these people once and for all, that's a small price to pay for freedom.
Release the Superboy.
Supergirl.
Okay. Giant metal creatures. Falling from the sky. Speaking in clicks and beeps. Father would love this dream.
And Superman.
You could do so much good. We could do so much good.
I am doing good, Lois.
Clark's such a loner. Never really lets anyone get close to him.
The New 52 Adventures of Superman. Available the first of every month on iTunes and at new52superman.libsyn.com.
And our next issue is Green Lantern 179, which is perfectly sequential, which also has a cover date of August 1984. Would have been on sale on May 24th, 1984. It was edited by Lynn Wein with cover artist Dave Gibbons. And the issue is entitled Let Us Pray, which is P-R-E-Y. That way you make sure and get the pun. It was written by Lynn Wein, of course, artist and lettered by Dave Gibbons, and colored by Anthony Tolan. I'm going to be warned and be upfront. This issue jumps around a lot. So, bear with me. Some of these scenes are
very short. In fact, too much.
That's one of my criticisms, but it picks up right where we left off with the demolition team and the Predator preparing to face off on the partially demolished grounds of Ferris Aircraft. I should probably remove the word partially, but the Predator informs Rosie and company that Ferris Aircraft is under his personal protection. Rosie begins to fire rivets at the Predator, but he deftly dodges in the shots and manages to vanish momentarily. And as the demolition team fans out to search for him, they leave Carol, Thomas, and company to assess the situation. The airfields are being attacked, and Green Lantern has taken off when they needed him the most. Speaking of Hal, he's on Omnicron 4 trying to figure out a way to keep the planet from going the way of Krypton and fretting about being taken away from his friends in their time of need. And speaking of friends in need, Thomas is trying to make a call, and I assume that's to an emergency services, when the jackhammer finds him. And in one deft move, Predator leaps over the jackhammer and simultaneously slices his helmet in half. But his weapon is still active, and Jackhammer tries to lurch at Predator, who flips him into an electrical circuit box, shocking the crap out of the villain. In space, the Guardians note that Hal hasn't figured out how to save Omnicron 4, and they watch Hal think, and then an idea apparently occurs to Hal, and he flies off. Back at Ferris, Predator takes out Scoop Shovel, sorry Jeffrey, by damaging the hydraulics of his power arm, which causes it to retract and hit Scoop Shovel in the face.
Boom, 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 boom.
I know. And, and in space, Hal finds a meteor made of stellarium and starts to search out more meteors of the same type. And Jason Block, meanwhile, drinks away his disappointment in the fact that Green Lantern came out of his coma. And we jump back to Ferris, where Dr. Clay Kendall rushes to his side chair as the place is coming apart. Kendall tries to reach out with his mind as Hard Hat and the Predator come crashing into the building and end up blowing the chair's generators, sending unspeakable amounts of energy through Clay's body until he falls unconscious on the floor. Hal is smelting the stellarium into large poles, and suddenly we're back at Ferris Aircraft, where Predator tricks Steamroller into driving his steamroller bike directly into the centrifuge building, which sends the man and bike flying backwards. And Hal uses the stellarium to act as carbon rods to absorb Omnicron 4's excess radiation, saving the planet, but he has to argue with the Guardians to return to his friends on Earth. He tells the Guardians that if his friends and his home are destroyed because they ordered him there, they will live to regret it, and for an immortal being, that is a very long time. And Hal...
I never quite understood that thing. You'll live to regret this. That's not like a death threat. That's like you're going to be alive continually.
But you're going to regret it.
Yeah, but you'll be sorry. Go on.
And Hal heads back to Earth, leaving the Guardians with a lot of unpleasant things to ponder. And back at Ferris one last time, Predator comes down to the last member of the demolition team, Rosie, and he puts a knife in the barrel of her rivet gun, which makes it backfire, and Carol finishes her off with a clock to the jaw. Carol thanks the mysterious Predator, who lays a big fat kiss on her, and then takes off as mysteriously as he appeared. And the issue ends with Hal rushing back to Earth and realizing the absolute devastation that has befallen Ferris Aircraft, and essentially the demolition team has succeeded in destroying them.
I don't have a lot of notes on this one. My first note was pages 2 and 3. Am I the only one who is reminded of Ram Man from Masters of the Universe?
No, I thought of Juggernaut.
Okay. Yeah, same here.
Okay. Page 5, and this actually applies to the rest of the issue too, but I really liked how the Predator just took the demolition team down one by one.
I had a note on that too. I thought that was – it made the issue fun, but
– yeah. I mean, granted, they're not the most formidable of foes, but each scene was quite slick. Jumping ahead to pages 10 and 11, I got to this and I could only think, yeah, this isn't going to end well, is it? Not in an – I'm worried about him kind of way, but more like a science experiment gone wrong / Marvel Universe origin story kind of way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a very similar note.
Okay, good.
Like, this guy's coming back as a supervillain.
Page 14. Yeah, you tell him, Hal Jordan. You tell those all-powerful aliens who really only have power because they say they do. Put them in their place. Page 16. Pay attention to this scene. It will be important later.
I have a similar note where not only is Hal going to be ticked when he finds out, but wait till they find out Predator's real identity.
Right.
Yeah, and of course now Carol's got a huge burn on her fist from, punching Rosie in the cigar.
Right. But that's all I had. I thought this was an okay story, but it was mostly fight, fight, punch, punch. So
yeah,
not a lot of notes.
I just felt like it went so much back and forth. There were so many different stories being told, which the last issue had that as well, but this one felt like it really took it to the nth degree. I mean, we get half a page of Block because we got to check in with Block.
Right.
And I just don't think we really even need to check in with him because, again, we just got that last issue. This is basically a two-parter, and the next one, oddly enough, is entitled Aftermath. So we are really getting, you know, a nice three-page beginning-to-end story with this, which works out great for the episode.
Do you think they're doing too many subplots, or that they just don't need to check in on all of them every issue?
I think that there may well be too many subplots.
Okay.
But you don't need to check in with them every issue, especially when you have two right in a row that are clearly a part one and part two.
Okay.
True.
Like, there was no need to check in with Block for half a page to reestablish what's already been established. And in the same way, let's take a look at what else there is. It's really, once you get partway into the story, well, maybe it's not too many subplots necessarily. I do like the duality of the battle on Earth and the thing that's going on in space. It's certainly not a battle or anything, but Hal's really got to use his brain and figure that one out. And once again, this deal with the planet exploding, I mean, this is real drama. Especially comparing it to Krypton, which did explode, and it was a huge failure on the behalf of a Green Lantern who Hal knows. It did occur to me on page 3 that since, you know, they have this solar-powered jet, and this is the thing that's going to be keeping Ferris Aircraft in business, now might be a good time to test fly it and just get it out of there. Just throwing that out there. skipping to page 5... We know that this Predator is a good guy because he doesn't kill Jackhammer at this point. I mean, he splits the guy's helmet while doing, you know, one of those flippy flips, and flippity floppity floop. And but he could very easily have just killed him at that point. So we know that there must be something good about him. Either that, or he's one of those supervillains who doesn't kill. And I'm kind of torn on that one myself. I love that this is called Stellarium. That is such a great name. Because, you know, Stellar Cloud, yeah, it's no trick or secret as to where that's supposed to be coming from. But it's such a great name, and I really got a kick out of that. Page 10, it's, it is exactly at page 10 where I felt like there were too many stories going on at the same time, and that's what I was talking about before.
Okay.
Page 11, yeah, Clay's going to be a supervillain, ha ha ha, I'm pretty sure. Page 14, this is really cool, the idea of treating the planet core like a nuclear reactor. I'm not trying to say anything about it being real or anything like that, but the concept is cool, and I get a huge kick out of it. So he takes the huge carbon rods and basically rams them through the whole planet, and he had to have gotten a lot of them. This, you know, it probably took him a couple of days, only not. And last note that I have, since it's only a 17-page story with a backup, page 16, I'm pretty sure that this kiss is already a hint as to who Predator is, but I also love that Carol knocked out Rosie the Riveter. I mean, at least she got to do something.
Yeah, rather than just stand there and be helpless.
Right.
Okay. Mine start with the cover. The OCD in me, looking at that cover with the battery, the large core battery, and Ferris Aircraft sign, it drives me crazy. They shouldn't be sitting next to each other. And that's the only thing I kept seeing. And page 1, the Predator seems...
It didn't bother you that Rosie was shooting nipples at it?
No, I didn't even get that far. Just those two can't be together.
Okay.
And yes, the nerd voice came out. On page 1, the Predator seems really familiar, almost like a character we have seen before. And that's all I'm going to say. On page 7, the Guardians are judging Hal for thinking his way out of a situation. As you said, Jeffrey, this is high drama. There's a planet at stake. The entire power source of will relies on thought and problem solving. That's kind of part of making the constructs. And they're judging him for essentially doing his job, which is to find solutions to these problems.
Well, I think that the expectation is that, you know, a smarter race that wasn't human would be able to figure it out more quickly than this. Not that we could or could, you know, just tell him, here's what you got to do. But then the real thing is that they think that he's actually abandoning that planet when he flies off to go and find that Stellarium stuff. And really, I'm just wondering why the Guardians have to be watching this. It's such a voyeuristic thing.
Well, that's the Guardians. They're creepy. They're creepy men.
Well, it should be the Monitor.
Oh, that's true. I can see that. That would have been cool.
Yeah.
Who monitors the Monitor?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. On page 9, this is the second baseball glove in as many issues, but it's redeemed by the spectroscope he uses in the very next panel. And then on page 12, did you guys notice
a green spectroscope to see other colors? It's like an invisible yellow shield.
On page 12, why is the sound effect Doom trademarked? I mean, if you look close at the panel, right by the sound effect where he's doing his smelting and it's right by the anvil, it's trademarked.
Wow.
And that's not even like the Lucasfilm joke. It's actually there.
Maybe the anvil is trademarked. I got nothing. No.
I just didn't know that you could do that.
No, but Stellarium is trademarked.
Is it really?
No.
I didn't know.
It's like my third lie in as many sentences, and you're still asking me if I'm being serious.
Sorry, I'm sorry.
I'm also wearing pink underwear.
I like pink very much.
Yes.
On page 13, you know, the centrifuge scene, that just cracked me up. As much as I liked all the general Predator tearing these people apart, this one was actually the one that cracked me up. Because he makes the crack about Steamroller not being able to fit, not being able to hit the side of a hangar from the inside. And then leads him into that where it wouldn't actually work that way, but makes the crack that, well, I guess he can hit the side.
Yeah.
It was comical. It was very Wile E. Coyote. And it doesn't necessarily have a place in a Green Lantern book, but it worked for me. And then on page 14, as I said, Hal tells the Guardians to stuff it, even after his, you know, heartfelt, solemn promise to be true to his Green Lantern duties and not to his friends. He tells them to stuff it and goes and takes off after his friends. Not that I'm judging Hal for doing that, because obviously if it was my family and the day is saved, I would definitely rush back. But I think it's the attitude he gives them that, you know, you did say a few issues back, buddy, that you'd be more true to what you're doing. You are a Green Lantern through and through. Those were your words.
It's kind of a backpedaling thing that I think is just a, to be honest with you, a poorly done character moment.
True. Yeah, and it bothered me a little bit. And what I liked, though, as you mentioned, this was a fun issue. It's not the end-all be-all of issues, but I enjoyed it. It did jump around way too much, but I liked that in the end, the Demolition Team actually won despite all the fighting. In fact, in a lot of ways, with Predator leading them around, he kind of helped them fight by accident because he caused quite a bit of destruction trying to stop them as well. And so, I mean, we have this horrible destruction in the end of the issue. It's almost like Empire Strikes Back because we end on a down note and it's about to swoop us into a different direction.
Yeah, because Ferris Aircraft pretty much looks like Barry Allen's apartment at this point. I just love the idea that he has a hard time cleaning up. He's the Flash and he's got superpowers, but when he tries to clean up, he still ends up doing it like a bachelor. There's still stuff everywhere.
Yeah. But that's all I had on the main story. There was a backup story. Did you have anything on letters or anything like that?
No, go ahead with the backup. Yeah, that's good enough.
Yeah, the backup is Tales of the Green Lantern Corps presents Green Magic in Enemy Lines. I'm going to be honest with you. This isn't going to make a lot of sense. It didn't make a lot of sense to me when I read it. Did you guys follow along coherently or?
Yes.
I kind of gave up in the beginning of page 2.
Okay. I appreciate your honesty. I'm just going to do we'll get into that.
I'm like, hey, look, it's an alien race, and what's different about them? They have mohawks.
Mohawks. It's Last of the Mohicans. The story was written and lettered by Todd Klein with Dave Gibbons on art, colored by Anthony Tolan. And on the planet of Ruhn, apparently science and magic is at war. And in the middle is a sorceress named Holly, spelled exactly how my wife spells her name. So it turns out not only did I marry a great woman, she's a Green Lantern character as well. She is also a Green Lantern as well as being a sorceress. With her sidekick Micken, which is a strange gremlin monkey thing, and a scientist named Tark.
It's Orko.
Yeah. She struggles to prevent an all-out attack. Now, Holly's friends Skeeve, which is the most terrible name in comics, Brennus and Randor, who will someday be the father of He-Man, I think, gather for a patrol to defend against the hated scientists. And Micken, the odd gremlin thing, approaches them and tells the group to meet Holly at Crater Isle. Or on, I should say, on Crater Isle. Now, Holly has been banished by the sorceress leader Azure, and Micken returns. So he and Holly, invisible with the power ring, head off to meet the cadre on the island. Meanwhile, Azure gets an order from the leader of the Science Council to make sure Holly is dead and her friends too, because of some things that happened back before we started covering these books. And when Holly's friends arrive on the island, they're surprised to see Tark, who is a scientist pilot and should be the enemy. And they prepare to attack him, but Holly tells them not to. The pilot has proven himself to be an ally by rescuing her. Skeeve and Tark have a fight to prove Tark's worthiness, and it is Skeeve's power over the Earth and Tark's weapons. It ends up being an excellent brawl, which ends with the two finding mutual respect for one another just as an enemy sub arrives on the island, and the story wraps to be concluded next issue. Who wants to start out on this one?
Oh, I guess it's my turn. This is part of a series of stories. There's a footnote that says that refers back to Green Lantern 163, 165, and 166.
Mm-hmm.
They're all part of the Tales of the Green Lantern Corps backups, but they're also branded Green Magic. But my only, I guess, specific note about this one was that the art was pretty nice. I have some overall thoughts on both parts, but I'm going to save those until the end of part two, which is in the next issue. So
that's okay. A really good idea, and in fact, I'll jump in with mine because I'd like to say all my notes now instead.
Okay.
which is all of basically one note, and I feel like I don't have any investment in this story. My real problem with it is that there are so many new characters that I've never seen before. They all look weird and funky, which is cool and everything. They all have these weird names. Not only do you have to learn the names because they're not human names, you got to keep them all straight and have some sense of who they're supposed to be. I'm just glad that I didn't have to recap this one. Or the next one for that matter, because I didn't even want to pay that close attention to it. I'm sorry, it was just was not digging it on this one. And the only other note that I have is that these guys with the little like atom symbol on their on the side there, they look to me like they have the same kind of armor on as Adam Strange does.
I thought that too. Yeah, I was pretty lost here. I tried. I even went back and took a look. I did a skim of 163, 165, and 166, and I just felt even more lost. It is a tough pill to swallow, and it felt like – it made me think of Thundar the Barbarian, where it's really dense, it's really hard to get into, but I think if given more time, I would probably go back and try to put all these together. Fortunately, they are reprinted. All of these are reprinted in Tales of the Green Lantern Corps Volume 2, so maybe putting them together would make more sense. And Michael, it sounds like you've had more experience with these stories.
I haven't read the backup, the previous three. No, I haven't read those.
Okay. I did a quick skim of them, but it didn't.
Were it not for the footnote in this story, I wouldn't even know they existed. So
yeah, same here.
Okay, yeah, and they didn't shed a lot of light, so no pun intended.
Well, there's nothing of note in the Letters by Lantern Light column this time, so unless anyone wants to make fun of the Burger Time ad that's on the back cover, I think we'll just take a quick break and come back with issue number 180.
I don't think there's anything funny about Burger Time.
Fair enough. God, I was hoping you had something.
In a world where planets die,
I have come to the conclusion Krypton is doomed.
Did I hear him right?
Where good and evil fight a never-ending battle.
But millions of people will die.
Millions! Once again, the press underestimates me.
One man will become a hero.
Every world needs its heroes, Clark. They inspire us to be better than we are. And they protect us from the darkness that's just around the corner.
One man will rise to the challenge.
Look, up in the sky, it's a bird!
It's a plane!
One man will wear spandex.
Well, one thing's for sure, nobody's gonna be looking at your face.
Mom?
Well, they don't call them tights for nothing.
Presenting The Thrilling Adventures of Superman, a podcast looking at the Man of Steel's history via his earliest adventures in comics, radio, and film. Featuring reviews, commentary, creator spotlights, and more. Join the adventure at GreatKrypton.com. And we're back with Green Lantern number 180, which was cover dated September 1984 and released sometime around June 21st of 1984 for 75 cents. Our cover is by Dave Gibbons, and the title of our first 18-page story is Aftermath. Credits for this story are Len Wein, writer and editor, Dave Gibbons, penciler, Mike DiCarlo, guest inker, Ben Oda, letterer, Anthony Tollin, colorist. As our story opens, Green Lantern aids the fire department in quelling the fires resulting from the destruction. As the police take the demolition team into custody, Green Lantern confronts Steamroller about who hired them, but gets no answers. Hearing a scream from the Psylab, Green Lantern rushes over to find Jake and April caring for an unconscious Clay. Green Lantern flies him to the hospital and then heads to the roof to collect his thoughts. Back at Ferris, Bruce Gordon and Richard Davis look over the solar jet, which escaped any destruction thanks to the Predator. And they talk about how it's nearly ready for Hal, or Richard if he has his way, to fly. Back at the hospital, Green Lantern chews over the guilt about what happened while he was away, then stops a mugger before heading inside as Hal to meet with Carol, Jake, and a very distraught April. The doctor informs them that Clay made it through the surgery and he would recover. However, the explosion has severed his spinal cord, leaving him unable to walk. Jake comforts April, and they go back to see Clay, while Hal follows Carol outside. The situation between them is tense as they talk about the events of the last two issues. Hal recommends John Stewart to try and help with the rebuilding of the airfield, but laments, saying he wishes there was more he could have done for Clay. Carol slaps Hal across the face and chews him out for being an errand boy for the Guardians and putting his duties as Green Lantern before her and Ferris Air. Hal tries to explain, but Carol is having none of it and gives him an ultimatum. The ring or her. Carol drives off, and Hal switches to Green Lantern and vents his frustration by trashing some satellites in space before heading to Star City to talk to Green Arrow. Ollie tells him his decision seems pretty clear. There are 3,600 Green Lanterns, but only one Carol. Green Lantern then heads to the JLA satellite to talk to the Flash, but Barry is apprehensive about giving any advice, given the current state his own life is in. Green Lantern then heads to Metropolis and consults Superman, who tells him, "Those of us with superpowers are a breed apart. We owe it to the world, we owe it to ourselves, to use those powers for the greater good, even if doing so makes us miserable." But Superman says the decision is ultimately Hal's and Hal's alone. Green Lantern thanks Superman for his advice, and later that night arrives at Carol's Oceanside bungalow. After waking Carol up, he tells her that he thought over what she said earlier and has made his decision. It's Carol that he wants, and he is quitting the Green Lantern Corps.
Take this job and shove it.
Ain't working here no more.
This is, I think it's my turn to start. It's not the most dynamic cover, but it's mainly how Green Lantern looks. It's actually a very cool cover, except for the way Green Lantern looks. It's almost like he was pasted on at the last second, is what it feels like. But this is one that I would buy off the shelf, especially since Superman is going to be in it, as the little thing says so.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Moving into page two, this big panel of the demolition team being carted away. It's just what I've been waiting for, them to leave. That's so helpful. But it's page four. Hal has been a Green Lantern for a while now. He knows that he can't be everywhere at once. I mean, he's certainly justified that he had to go, but I wish that the thought balloons reflected that instead of, oh, it's all my fault, if only I had stayed. No, he had to go. And, I mean, I would really rather see him being a little bit stronger in what it is that he's saying here, that he didn't have an option. It's not like he could have been there to save this person. It is really unfortunate, and it is sad. I mean, this guy could die, and Hal's blaming himself. I don't think that Hal really should blame himself, even if it is one of those irrational things. But oh well. Page six, Hal's really, really mad at this point. And this purse snatcher is really, really lucky that he's going to be walking away from this at all, even if it's in cuffs. And I do have to mention that I love the way that he looks on that last panel on page six. That really is inked well. I'm enjoying the guest inker at that point.
Mm-hmm. Just the shot of his eyes?
Yes.
Okay.
Kind of the detail on the face. I see what you're saying.
Yep. Now, on page 8, it's revealed that Kendall will not be able to walk again, and that is really kind of heartbreaking. He did a lot to, you know, help stop the demolition team. But still, in this universe, there are purple healing rays. I mean, Hal should think of something.
True.
Maybe. Who knows? Page 10, finally, a mention of Jon Stewart. And I've been looking forward to having him involved in these stories, and I'm guessing that it's going to be coming up soon. But hey, speaking of not being able to walk, so
wow,
so
that wow, that was nice, but wow,
wow, yeah.
Page 11, Carol's hurt here, and well, I mean, not physically, but she's hurt that Hal went away instead of helping out and, you know, saving the day. And I don't blame her for not seeing reason right away, but we're talking about an entire planet that Hal saved. All the lives on an entire planet. That was Hal's doing. That was his contribution to the last couple of issues. And I'm not expecting her to see that now, but I would expect her to see that at some point. Or by the time she gets home and cools off and says, oh man, he really did do a good job if he went off and saved an entire planet. I guess I can't really fault him for that. That was important. But we don't get that. I really do love this page on page 13, the entire layout. Uh-huh. This is such a great page. Just the panel progression to it is really interesting. It's done in a somewhat counterintuitive way, but it still makes sense. Now, the only thing that bugs me on this page is that Hal goes up and just starts smashing satellites.
Yeah, random vandalism works, I guess.
Yeah, and now these are supposedly defunct satellites. They are not really serving any purpose anymore. Something should be done with them. But by destroying them, and you can see there are little bits and pieces breaking off all over the place, this is what got China into trouble. Because they figured that they had like two satellites. I don't remember exactly how it was supposed to work. And they didn't have a use for them anymore. And they wanted to see what would happen if we smashed them together. So they smashed them together, and lots of little pieces broke off all over the place. So now, even though, you know, orbit is huge, and it's unlikely that something like a space station would really ever have any direct interaction, even with these millions of tiny little pieces, but they are whizzing by at the speed of a bullet. And that's not something that – there's no degradation in space. It's not going away. It's going to be there basically forever. So that's what Hal's responsible for now. Just throwing it out there. Not happy with Hal today. Page 15, he's eating Green Arrow's chili, and it's too hot for him. All I can say is, suck it up, put on some sour cream and some cornbread in that chili. Page 15 and 16 as well. I really need to read this run on the Flash with the whole murder story.
Yeah,
I've never read it. I'm still missing a few of the issues though. But honestly, when they had on that cover that little band that said that it was going to have Green Arrow and Superman and Flash, I thought that he was going to call them in to have them fix Ferris aircraft. But that's not what happens. What happens at all? He gets advice from them. Page 18. The thing is that both of these choices to either choose to be a Green Lantern or to choose to be with Carol Ferris, both of those choices have merits. But without – I'm not looking at future covers, but here's my expectation. I think that Jon Stewart's going to become Earth's Green Lantern at some point, maybe in the next issue, who knows, and that Hal will regret his decision and really need the ring back in an emergency. And also, it does occur to me that if he's going to choose Carol Ferris, he really should have thought of this before he accepted a year of exile. Just saying. Maybe he should have thought of that last year. And that's it for my notes.
I don't have that many on this, page by page wise. On page 4, that's right, let's drag the critically injured man on a swinging gurney in the harsh wind of flight. That's right. You couldn't make a bubble around that, or maybe a gyroscope. You made a spectrograph, or But, anyway, page 10, Carol is way out of line for going off on Hal and demanding that, especially for somebody with multiple personality cosmic villain disorder. I mean, what's she going to do? Star Sapphire him to death? I don't know. But no, I mean, she should know getting in with Hal, knowing, as Jeffrey mentioned, that he saved a freaking planet. This is his job. She knew that when she got with Hal, she knows who he is. She knows what his responsibilities are. And I think she's way out of line.
You can still understand why she's angry, though.
Well, she's very human. I can understand that. But I would like to see her come to her senses towards the end of this issue and say, no, Hal, I was, you know,
yeah,
out of line. That's the way I'll phrase it. On page 14 and 15, I'm glad we got to see Hal and Ollie and that there was chili involved. Just something about that felt right. And the big thing I was really glad about was Barry, seeing them kind of have this quiet talk, because I think this is one of the very last times they'll actually be together before Crisis.
I bet you're right.
And that makes that very last scene where Hal's in the teleporter waving, leaving kind of almost a sad Barry. Well, not almost. He's going through a lot of crap. But leaving Barry there, it makes that scene really, really sad in hindsight because of what happens that I'm not going to spoil if you don't know.
Yeah.
And, of course, on page 17, if you're going to make a huge superhero decision, you go to the man. You go to the first hero. So I'm glad Hal had enough respect to go to Superman and get his thoughts. And then on page 18,
and Superman really does give him, you know, the stock Superman answer, like without saying anything that's even remotely like this. What he's basically saying is, well, I do what I do because it's the right thing to do, and it doesn't occur to me to do anything different. Now, maybe you feel differently about that because you're not as good of a person.
But he's not actually being critical.
I know. He's not being critical. He is very much being the farm boy. He's being honest and frank, and he's not saying those things. But there are things that I think can kind of – anybody who isn't Superman can imply to themselves.
Yeah, you can infer from just the situation.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, and Superman, you're absolutely right. He was played exactly right. Mm-hmm. He kind of gave the advice that any Superman fan would expect.
Plus, he's Superman. I'm sorry, I'm not Jesus.
And on page 18, Hal decides to quit the Corps for Carol only a handful of issues after gaining his resolve and becoming, you know, hardcore Corps. I had to check the cover of the book to make sure I wasn't reading Spider-Man.
Yeah, gotcha.
Because Hal is – they're kind of playing him a little apparently younger than I pictured him. A little bit more boyish. I mean, granted, Hal is kind of rebellious and very you know, defiant of authority, but not to the point of saying, oh, I'm going to quit being this in order to be with this one woman who was once my villain. And because nobody has mentioned that Carol was Star Sapphire yet, and yet she's still wearing the Star Sapphire colors. I had not caught that until I started doing some research for these issues. I'm like, oh crap, that's been there for quite a while. Huh. And yeah, Hal is actually taking the high road by not calling her on that, because I guess I would be lowbrow and be like, well, it's not like I went crazy and developed an entirely different personality that was a villainous
yet.
Well, yeah, crap. But that's all I had as far as bit by bit.
I like this cover quite a bit. I probably shouldn't, but I do. Like Jeffrey, I think it's a really nice cover. Hal does look a little... He reminds me of... What were those things called? Color forms. That's what they were.
Yes, oh, yeah.
That reminds me of a color
exactly
form.
That's looks like.
But in my page by page... page 3, April here is freaking out about Clay being injured, and she's like, is he? You know, as in, is he dead? And Jake replies, no, April, not yet. I'm like, way to be comforting, you jerk.
Yeah.
But just to,
no, he's alive and we're going to get him through it. How about that?
Just to be nitpicky, Hal calls April Ms. O'Rourke, and technically they've not met yet, so he shouldn't know her name.
Oh, true.
But that's just a minor nitpick. Page 5, what is with Davis here? What's his beef against Hal? Is this something that stems from before Hal's exile? Do you know?
The thing that Davis has against Hal, I think, is that Hal's going to be the pilot in the solar jet, and he wants to be the pilot.
Yeah, I think that one is actually pretty straightforward.
Okay.
That's why he has green eyes. He's envious.
Wow.
No, I'm not making that up. Look at the lower right-hand panel.
Which page is this?
That's still on page 5.
Okay. Sorry, I was on page 4. Yes, green eyes.
Okay.
It's a subtle art trick. It's envy. I'm not doing that to be funny. I mean, that's actually why it's there.
Okay. Page 6. I like the art on this panel. Hal in the biggest panel here. He's got his hand kind of resting on the smaller panels. It's a little thing, but I like when artists can incorporate, sometimes when they can incorporate the grid into the artwork. But as far as Hal goes in these opening pages, Hal's feeling an unbelievable amount of guilt here. And rationally, he shouldn't be feeling any because, you know, it's not like he can be everywhere at once. And ultimately, his duty to the core needs to be before his responsibilities at home. And he, well, in most cases, but, and he did serve the greater good by saving an entire planet full of people, opposed to being at Ferris, where there were very few, if any, casualties. But on the other hand, his reaction here is very human and very believable. And this kind of goes over to Carol, too, on pages 11 and 12. I've been critical so far about the depiction of Carol, and I could say here that she's being very irrational, because she is, but again, her reaction is very human and very believable, because she's grieving, and grief isn't rational.
Yeah, and she slaps Hal, because violence is okay when women do it to men.
Well, that's another topic, though. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, I mean, she sped right through denial and is on full-on anger mode here, and unfortunately, like you said, Hal's taking the brunt of it, even though what she's asking of him isn't what a person thinking rationally would do.
Mm-mm.
Because had Hal not had the ring, they'd be in the exact same spot, because he couldn't have protected them either. So it's irrational but believable given the circumstances.
Yeah, that does seem to be like a running problem throughout this run. Unfortunately, there are times when people literally do act out of character, but then there are plenty of other times where they're acting very much in character, and the emotions that they're feeling are completely irrational, but it makes sense that they're feeling that way.
Right.
And so this is one of those times.
Pages 14 through 17, I thought it was really nice seeing Ween bring in some fellow Justice Leaguers who are the only ones that can really relate to what Hal's dealing with here. I mean, Hal and Tom are good friends, but Tom can't relate to the superhero side of things. And I think it also makes sense that he'd talk to Green Arrow, The Flash, and Superman, because in this era, those were his three closest, pardon the pun, three closest super friends. But it also gave him three different viewpoints, and like you guys, they all ring true to those characters. I mean, it feels right that Ollie would say, ditch the ring, and it feels right that Superman would give him, basically give him the, with great power must also come great responsibility speech. Barry's response is less true, but during this era, he's going through a lot of stuff as well, which I haven't read, but I mean, I know he's going through a lot of stuff, so it, you know, kind of evens out.
Yeah.
Plus, that shot of Superman on page 16 is really nice, with it, where he's dumping the guys out of the helicopter. I like that.
I think it's a tank, and he's just dumping them out
tank,
of the top.
You're right. Yeah. Why did I say helicopter? I don't know. Anyway, it's a nice shot.
Yeah.
That's all I had overall. I thought this was a really great issue. Maybe the best one we've covered to this point. Doesn't sound like you guys were as fond of it as I was, but...
Oh, no, I agree. I think the dramas, we're hitting a big high point, and this is definitely a ramp up, and I will agree this is the best issue we've done to date in terms of the actual cover, the actual runs that we're looking at.
It's definitely my favorite of this month, and I actually did enjoy the other two, you know, DTs aside. But, I think I might actually agree with you that it's the best one to date.
And it's a great cliffhanger to end the episode on, too.
Yes, absolutely.
Except there's that backup story.
Well, yes.
Right.
As far as the main stories go.
Yeah.
But to get into the backup, this is Enemy Lines Part 2. It was 6 pages with the same creative team as the last one, so I'm not going to repeat them. We pick up right where the backup from 179 left off as Halika, Micken, Tark, and the rest attack the sub. They quickly overcome it, but Halika is taken back by the savagery of her compatriot's attack. She orders the rest to stand down as she pulls the pilot from the sub and removes his helmet to reveal that the pilot is Tark's father. He thanks him for the rescue, saying that he misjudged her, and goes on to explain that his son's betrayal got him dismissed from the Ministry of Science, and he's now a wanted man. He tells the group he believes that Vinor is hoarding glowstone and trying to push the civilization into war, and he also says he intercepted information that he believes Halika's parents are somehow involved. That Halika, Micken, and Tark agree to go back to the mainland and find out more and try to thwart Vinor's schemes, while Tark's father and the rest stay on the island for reasons we're not really told. Meanwhile, Vinor tells Azure that the signal failed while he had been tracking Tark's father, and that he has faith that Azure can use her powers to find him. The end. For now. Or really ever, because there were no more stories that continued this. So,
yeah, and my only note, I'm going to throw this out there because it just occurred to me. Looking at that very last panel on the last page, this bad guy whose name is, what is it, Azure? So he's
Vinor is the guy. Azure is the girl with the mohawk.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so Vinor. I take a look at that, and the first thing that comes to mind is Denomalos. Did you ever see Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey?
I have not.
Well, it's okay. Nobody's.
Maybe played. I have. It's been a long time. I don't remember.
You should watch it twice.
Okay.
Like tomorrow.
Did you have anything, David, on this second
part? I honestly didn't have any notes on this one.
As for me, you know, I read this backup and the last backup like 3 times. And it's not that it didn't make sense because I could follow the story, but at the same time, I felt a lot like Jeffrey said, I felt like I was being thrown into the middle of it because I had no reference as to who these characters are or the world they inhabit. It kind of felt like watching The Empire Strikes Back without ever having seen Star Wars and then not watching Jedi because it's just the middle chapter of a story.
Yeah.
I put a note down that one day I'd go back and reread the backups to see if it helped it, but it sounds like David did that and it didn't do it. So
I did. In all fairness, I did a light skim. Okay. I'm going to try to read them a little bit more, but yeah.
I just can't believe you read it 3 times because I read it once and I'm.
Well, normally
I'm not as committed as you.
Normally, I read it once, you know, just for the show.
Yeah.
But I thought, well, maybe if I read it a couple more times, it'll make a little more sense. But
no.
Yeah. And unfortunately, there's no more stories set in this world. The Green Lantern does have another minor appearance down the road at some point, but we never get a resolution to this story, Apocalypse.
Oh no, really, darn.
Don't hold back. Tell us how you really feel, Jeffrey.
Okay.
But there's a one-page letters column this time because the main story was a page longer than normal, and nothing of note to talk about in that.
It's people writing in letters about the shark.
Yep. There you go.
There you go.
No, this was the reprint.
Okay. Oh yeah, the one with the Gil Kane cover.
Yeah.
Oh okay. Fair enough.
Anyway, as with last episode where Hal was, or after last episode where Hal was all over the place during that spate of issues, this time he only made an appearance in one other set of issues that I'm aware of, and that was in the first three issues of the Superpowers series that was released in 1984. It was the first of three series published to tie in with the very awesome toy line. I have all three series, but I've never read them.
I might have the... some of those.
I have the first two. And I have the Hall of Justice sitting right over the... well, as he points on an audio podcast. It's on one of my shelves next to the Supermobile.
There have been several ads in recent issues advertising the first wave of Superpowers toys. And I've enjoyed seeing those.
Yeah.
Well, I might not have any of those. Huh.
Did you guys grow up with the Superpowers?
No.
Oh, most certainly.
Okay.
Not I.
Really?
What a poor
child. Sad existence, yeah. No, they were kind of the... I mean, Mego had the dolls. These were the first real action figures.
Uh-huh.
And, of course,
yeah,
I mean...
you squeeze Superman legs and he punches. That's pretty cool.
Yep.
Oh, I did have one of those. But, I mean, it was just Superman, because Superman was the only one that I cared about.
Yeah. They had a good Green Lantern figure as well. I think Green Lantern was the first one I actually picked up.
I didn't know who Green Lantern was until the Return of Superman.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, that's right. You came in late, didn't you? You got into comics a little bit later in the
when I was 14.
Yeah. That makes sense.
They're the most awesome heroes fighting the most despicable villains in the universe struggle for power. And they're yours in this incredible collection of 12 action figures. Just squeeze them. Each has its own power action. Superman punches, Brainiac kicks, The Flash runs. Get them together and you trigger the endless battle of the superpowers. Who wins? Now, who loses? You decide.
Now with easy-to-lose capes.
Yeah, no joke.
And the Brainiac figure was not very well constructed.
Yeah, I was about to say, Brainiac doesn't kick. He breaks by the within right. 5 minutes of leaving the store. So.
Right.
But I'm glad that Mattel actually kind of picked up on that idea, and they pretty much have at this point have re-released all of the figures that were involved with that line in the more modern version, the superposable.
Even like the, I can't think of the names now.
The Samurai.
There you go. And the
Samurai and, all of them now at this point. Golden Pharaoh has become out.
Yeah.
Tyr. Yeah, they've actually released. And the nice thing is they started acknowledging it, and some of the more superpowers-centric characters actually had superpowers on their base. So, cool. On their figure base, so.
Oh, if I were rich and could buy all those.
Ah, yes. Anyway. Remember what you know?
But
what
since
the
you're not rich, you can steal them.
It's funny that the most sought-after figure from that line was Cyborg, because he was at the very tail end of the line. He wasn't mass-produced, and he was vacuum metalized. Anyway,
anybody got any final comments on these set of episodes?
This has been the best of the stories so far, in my opinion.
Yeah,
I agree. It feels like we're starting to hit a stride with these stories. Like everything is really starting to come together.
Yeah, and I definitely like it. I mean, don't get me wrong. When I start making fun of the DTs, I'm enjoying making fun of the DTs at the same time. Scoop shovel.
I had to get it in one more time.
I did.
I'm a little nervous, though, because we're going to have a writer change here in about 6 or 7 issues, so who knows what that's going to bring. But
you know, I love Len Wein, but I'm also happily willing to welcome a different writer at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But next episode, we'll be looking at Green Lantern 181, 182, and 183, which will bring big changes to the title and the life of Hal Jordan as we continue to deal with the fallout from the issues that we just covered. But until then, this is Michael Bradley.
I am J. David
Jeffrey Taylor.
Go ahead, Jeffrey.
I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And I am J. David
Weider. J. David Weider, yeah.
And we'll see you next time.
Don't mind me.
Shovel.
Okay, Rose.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Green Lantern's Light, hosted by Michael Bradley,
Jeffrey Taylor,
and J. David Weider. Show notes, past episodes, and other information about the show can be found at greenlanternslight.com. You can also subscribe to the show directly via the RSS feed and on iTunes.
If you'd like to get in touch with the show, drop us a line to greenlanternpodcast@gmail.com or use the contact form at the website. You can also follow the show on Facebook and Twitter to get updates and interact with us directly. Let us know your thoughts, and we might even read your message on a future episode.
Green Lantern and all related elements are copyright DC Comics. We hope you've enjoyed this episode and that you'll come back next month. But until then,
in brightest day,
in blackest night,
no evil shall escape our sight.
Let those who worship evil's might
beware our power.
Green Lantern's light. So do we have any preamble stuff, or do we just want to segue right into the first?
Are you saying should we acknowledge my semi-retirement, the whole 10 minutes of it? Or you just want to leave it alone?
Well, somebody asked on the Facebook page what your status was, and this was before you came back. And I just put that you'd be on the December episode and to stay posted for announcements. So,
and that actually made me wonder, like, did they have somebody else lined up?
Oh, no. We just didn't know. Okay. We didn't know what we were doing at that point, so I couldn't say, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm not going to quit. I'm not quitting.
Quitter.
I can't quit you.
Well, it did occur to me. I mean, as I told Michael,
broke
was there,
back
but
Oa.
It's like.